on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of InvestTalk. This is our hour-long conference call about your invested dollars. And we certainly try to promote your whole financial well-being, not just your invested dollars. The better you manage your personal finances, budgeting, insurance, education, the better you can afford investment opportunities. Okay, so we appreciate your interest, and we're pleased that you take this time to listen to the show. We really are. In a MarketWatch article called What Investors Should Worry About, the writer talked about how certain investors, in trying to anticipate the next market crash, will try to time the market. How many times have I said, do not try to time the market? It's impossible. Now, that is get in and out at times that you feel are the beneficial to you. Can you do that? It's a terrible idea. For most people, it's just a terrible idea. But the article goes on to say that playing some defense is a good idea. And I mentioned that too. We are kind of defensive in our stocks right now. We're still fully invested, but we're a bit defensive. So the writer cited Benjamin Graham, who suggested a good strategy is to gradually move assets from more risky stocks to less risky quality bonds. Today, you'd want short-term bonds, okay? Not long-term bonds, but and quality bonds, not junk bonds. We're going to talk about that in InvestTalk 101 today. Not junk bonds, and we're going to talk about why. So, you know, that sounds like a type of timing the market, doesn't it? Well, it is as simple of rebalancing. It really is called rebalancing. You're balancing away from something that's high risk to something that's low risk. You don't do it all at once, and it's a gradual thing. So Warren Buffett does it. He's a student of Ben Graham who suggested this, and he's done pretty well, hasn't he, with this approach. The idea is to be tactical, be a tactical investor. Take a measured approach, not moving too quickly. This means gradually taking profits on riskier assets, those that you know are riskier, and then reinvest those in something that's much less risky. Just it's prudent. When the market is not acting well, it's prudent. I'll fall back on a famous quote by Bernard Baruch. He said, I made my money by selling too soon. Don't sell too late, okay? Can we help you add some perspective to your investing experience? We're open. Anytime, any money question, our number is 888-99-CHART. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, but still you can call anytime you want. And we can, if you call during the show, we can have a conversation, but I still answer questions no matter when you ask them. Now it's time to start the Q&A. Let's take this first question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, I'm a podcast listener from New York, and I listen to your excellent show every day. I have read and heard that the aversion to nuclear power plants, both in China and Japan, may be lessening, and that making an investment in a uranium ETF like URA or a company like Cameco, which is CCJ, might be timely. I respect your common sense approach to investing. Do you think this is a common sense investment at this time, or we should wait until things get a little clearer? Thanks. Bye.
It's hard for me to believe that Japan and parts of Europe will abandon nuclear power because they make up a great amount of their energy needs. And as oil and natural gas, those kind of prices increase, nuclear power looks better and better and better. Now, there are a lot of problems with nuclear power, but some of these nuclear power plants are so old, they need to be shut down. And new nuclear power plants can be made much safer. And to be honest, You know, when's the last time you heard of a nuclear power plant having a problem other than in the tidal wave that hit Japan? I mean, on its own. It's rare these days, even from really old nuclear power plants that are out there, especially in the United States. So the question is it a good time to invest in nuclear power plants? And I think what you want to do is stick with the engineering, the big companies, the big engineering companies, big companies like GE that supplies different, but are diverse enough where it's just not tied to nuclear power. I don't think it's a good idea to tie yourself to strictly nuclear power plants. I don't. But a broader sense of energy production, not oil drilling or anything like that. I'm talking more about the big turbines needed, things that like GE and Siemens make in Germany, those kind of big time equipment, I think might be interesting. Insurance companies have managed to build a better mousetrap to profit from retired accounts, from them profiting from retirement accounts. Is it a 401k ripoff? We'll talk about that. That's going to be our main talking point today. Downsizing in retirement. Should it be a part of the retirement plan? And what should we think about when we do that? The link between spending and income. If your income goes up, does your spending go up? If your income goes down, do your spending go down? There was a survey done, and that is very interesting findings. Also, China, did you see the China solar stocks implode? I'm going to talk about the ETFs that are in solar stocks. You need to be more careful with what's in your ETFs. And if we can get to it, where have all the shoppers gone? We're going to talk about that yesterday, and we didn't get a chance to. So those are things I'm going to discuss, hopefully, before the end of the show. But, of course, it's your show. You direct where we go. I don't have to get to any of these points. Depends on what you want to talk about. Would you like a short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks? I have that list. And I'm getting a lot of requests for it. So, you know, I will be happy to send it to anybody who asks for it. Or a list of commodity ETFs that allow investors to gain exposure to various areas of the commodity industry. And by the way, both these are available at for InvestTalk Insiders free. Now, I'll send it to you if you send me an email. But you can go look at all my lists and listen to all the previous podcasts for free. All you do is sign up. Is go to investtalk.com, and again, it's all free.
And now this market update for Wednesday, June 10th. The Dow soared 236 points and recaptured the 18,000 level, while the S&P 500 jumped 1.2%, the best day for either index in a whole month. The Nasdaq raised 1.3%, and is getting closer to a new record close. It all started after Bloomberg News reported Germany may require Greece to agree to one of the economic reforms urged by creditors before approving those bailout funds. So it looks like Wall Street believes that after weeks of ugly negotiations, a deal to avoid a potentially disastrous Greek exit from the Eurozone could be near, and that would be welcome news, especially since Greece is so strapped for cash. Wednesday's big rally represents a nice rebound from several bland days on Wall Street, but putting it into perspective, the S&P 500 is only up about 2.2% on the year and is still trading over 1% away from its record closing high. And that's our market update for this Wednesday. And now more Invest Talk. And even though it's a replay of a selected Invest Talk, you can still ask your question. Call the anytime number, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go to Min in San Diego. Hi, Min. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Oh, thank you, Steve. How can one person buy a natural gas index?
The easiest way is through an ETF, the UNG ETF. That's the symbol. It's called United States Natural Gas Fund. It's an exchange-traded fund corresponding to the change in price of the natural gas delivered at the Henry Hub in Louisiana. So it goes down if natural gas prices go down. It goes up if natural gas prices go up.
Now, Steve, when you guys track natural gas, does that mean they track natural gas exactly wherever natural gas move?
Yes, the CRB are supposed to be tracking the index. The UNG is supposed to be tracking the price, not the index.
Right.
You know the difference, right? It's not the index. It's the price of the gas at the Henry Hub station. So what's the price? It's supposed to follow the price. So that's a difference. The index, it might be a group of natural gas companies. Supply, ship, that's what the index would do. Where this UNG is trying to just track the price. Okay. Man, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
888-99-CHARTER is our number. You can reach us right now on any topic on InvestTalk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? We'll talk about anything you want. The real 401k ripoff that insurance companies don't want their clients to know about. Now, almost half the 401ks out there have what is called a stable value fund available to you. Those are produced by insurance companies, by the way. Stable value fund. And it looks pretty good because, you know, it's stable and it gives you a decent return, especially in this environment. And this is the problem. Let me tell you what the problem is. We're talking about, actually it's 37% of all 401k plans have these. About $721 billion. Okay, their return is similar to an intermediate bond fund and the liquidity and stability of the money market funds, kind of a combo situation here. But the problem, there's no transparency. They don't have to report what's in them. You don't know what's in them. Another problem, they charge a fee, and the fee's pretty low. Okay, it's like 1% or so or less. Okay, that's pretty low. But, and the return is like 2 to 3%. But did you know that they don't have to report not only what's in them, they also don't have to report the money they make on the spread. The spread is they buy short-term bonds or short-term instruments. They buy them and they sell them. And the difference between the buy and the sell, they get to make that spread. And then they put it in the portfolio for the yields. That spread, the estimated profit from that spread, because they don't have to report it yet, is about 2%. They're making a fortune off of these things. Now, this is going to change probably because there is a new transparency laws coming in, and there's a new law concerning who is a fiduciary and what they have to do as a fiduciary. And that the standard is going to be steep. And this is going to be for all 401ks. And this is a concern for everybody, every plan sponsor. For instance, if I'm a money manager helping people with the 401k, it's my job to find the best, cheapest, most suitable funds to put in there. I have to find, and I have to have a methodology and prove that they are, instead of just saying, here's a fund. This is a good fund. No, I can't do that anymore. And the plan sponsor, that means your employer, has to watch us or anybody. That if he doesn't hire somebody like us to do those kinds of jobs, he has to do it. The employer has to do it. In other words, you have to keep track and report on and be ongoing that you're offering the best that is available for your client, for your employees. And it's a new fiduciary law that's coming out. Very, very scary for employers. I think it is. I mean, it could result in a lot more lawsuits. There's already been a few lawsuits. It could produce more. Join the conversation. You can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART. You're listening to Invest Talk. That's 888-992-4278. We have lots to get to this next, the rest of the show, so don't go away. 888-99-CHART.
Part of the InvestTalk experience is visiting our website, investtalk.com. And one of the reasons for a visit is Steve's market commentary. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to his market commentary.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. This is one of the few podcasts that we know about that invites your participation, your voice. Have a conversation about your money issues with professional portfolio managers. The podcast is produced live every weekday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. So join in. The number is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Our phone is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Mike called from Danville.
Question about my 403B. I'm in the process of revamping it right now. Get the opinion of the experts first. I have about 10 different mutual funds that I pick from large, mid, small, and foreign. And then within each of those, I have like growth and value and blend and kind of a mixture. But I had two questions. One, 10 funds too many? And two, do I need to have any bond exposure since I'm 35?
The answer to the second question is no. When you're that young, 35, you really don't need any bond exposure. I don't like buying bond mutual funds or bond ETFs, except in very specific cases. Is 10 too many? It's hard to know that. I would like to look at the holdings and see which funds there are. There's probably a lot of overlap. Overlap meaning if you have two funds and they're both large cap funds, there's probably the same stocks in each of them. So it could be too many, but not necessarily. Or, you know, I'd have to look at the funds. My gut feeling is in a 401k where there's usually not a lot of choices, there's probably a lot of overlap. So I'd have to look at it. But your concern would be, am I too much exposed in any one part of the market? And that's what tell us the types of funds and the holdings that they have in them. Okay, if you were worried about the market, and that's why you're asking about bond funds, you're concerned, I would just probably take some profits from some of the funds that have done well. And at this point, I might put them in funds called the Stable Value Fund, if you have one, even though it's a ripoff by an insurance company, it's still your best bet, a good place for a fairly safe return. And wait for a market correction. I wouldn't go crazy. You want to stay in with the market, but maybe producing a little bit of cash by selling off some of the higher price assets that done well and just, you know, reallocate a little bit might be a good idea. Just a suggestion. Thanks, Mike. Mike, I appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, China solar stock implosion, a reminder to look under the ETF hood to see what's in it. For instance, there is a Guggenheim Solar ETF, TAN is the symbol, TAN. Well, there was a big solar implosion from a Chinese solar energy company called Hangenergy. H-A-N-E-R-G-Y. And that company went down 50% on today. 50%! Okay. Well, the problem is that company skyrocketed, skyrocketed earlier. The year to date went up 40% before today. And 150% if you're talking further in the last 12 months or so. And therefore, it became a very big part of this ETF. And there's another Chinese solar company inside that ETF that got crushed. And since it was a big part of this fund, the ETF got crushed. So your diversification wasn't that good in the fund. And you have to look at not just the diversification, but the quality of stocks in there too. You can't just buy the ETF until I'm in solar energy. Oh, good. You have to kind of look to see, you got to go deeper than that. You have to see what they're holding and is it worth the price that they are, what if it's a huge PE and there's hardly any growth? What if there's suspicion that the numbers are wrong? And that's what it was, or it's been suspicion, that the numbers are wrong. And you're holding on to it, and you have a huge exposure to that particular stock, or two stocks, or three stocks. And you're fat, dumb, and happy holding on to the ETF. You got to look deeper, especially into those little sliver sector ETFs. You don't have to worry about S&P 500 or a broader index ETF. You really don't have to worry about that. But when they start and these ETFs are getting more small slivers of the market. Those small slivers, you have to look deeper. Let's go to Joseph in San Diego. How are you doing, Joseph?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. The question I had was, I never really invested in the stock market, but I have like $10,000 I want to invest. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, what would be the best way to do that? Would it be to go through an investment group or buy stocks individually?
Probably, Joseph, it's probably too small to buy stocks individually because you don't want to buy one or two or three. That's not enough. You can do it, Joseph, but it's high risk. That's what that means. You can obviously buy, and you can buy a very safe company like a Johnson & Johnson or ExxonMobil. But even those, when you only have two or three or four in your portfolio, that risk is pretty high. The best thing to do, maybe, is to buy an exchange-traded fund, ETF. You know what that is?
Yes, I've read about it.
Okay, ETFs are all over the place. You can buy an ETF of the S&P 500. You can buy an ETF just for technology.
Okay.
You can buy an ETF for oil or oil services. You can buy ETF, but what happens is these little ETFs have a group of stockings inside them, like a mutual fund.
Okay.
But they trade like stocks. It would probably help you a lot if you joined an investment club because you learn a lot.
Okay.
And if you have that interest, that would be good. Also, start reading some of the books. Get my book. That would be a good start. Or Peter Lynch's books. They would be a good start. My book is Above Average Investing for the Average Investor.
And okay.
It's a pretty simple little book. You can get it at Amazon.com. But Peter Lynch has very good, easy books to read for beginners. Good luck with that, Joseph. I hope it works for you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Okay, 888-99-CHART. There's been a survey done between studying the relationship between spending and income. And bottom line is, there's not a very good link. The more income you make doesn't necessarily equal the more you spend. As a matter of fact, it said for every 1% rise in your income only relates to about a 0.1% rise in consumption. There's not much link. And it also found that incomes could vary greatly, up to 30% up and down. In 2013 to 2014, income could vary greatly. And not just for the poor either. Interesting. So if that is true, then consumer spending is a big driver of our economy, huge driver of our economy. It's hard, remember we've seen that the jobs have increased dramatically in the last year? And for the whole, for 6 months now, 5+ months this year, retail sales have not gone up. It's been pretty flat. Well, why? We had a good big jobs report just last month. Why come we're not having good retail sales? Well, because there's not a link between necessarily how much money you make and how much you spend. The link is very weak, the conclusion was. The link between spending and income is very weak. So what causes spending and non-spending? What is the link? And they didn't really have an answer for that. But that's what I want to know. Maybe it's more a fear about what's going on in the world, in the economy. Maybe, you know, politics. If there's a lot of bickering about politics around election time, maybe that. I don't know. I want to know what the link is. But, of course, they didn't give us the answer. A lot of these times, these surveys produce, at least for me, produce more questions than they answer. They produce questions. So.
And now this market update for Wednesday, June 10th. The Dow soared 236 points and recaptured the 18,000 level, while the S&P 500 jumped 1.2%, the best day for either index in a whole month. The Nasdaq raised 1.3% and is getting closer to a new record close. It all started after Bloomberg News reported Germany may require Greece to agree to one of the economic reforms urged by creditors before approving those bailout funds. So it looks like Wall Street believes that after weeks of ugly negotiations, a deal to avoid a potentially disastrous Greek exit from the Eurozone could be near, and that would be welcome news, especially since Greece is so strapped for cash. Wednesday's big rally represents a nice rebound from several bland days on Wall Street, but putting it into perspective, the S&P 500 is only up about 2.2% on the year and is still trading over 1% away from its record closing high. And that's our market update for this Wednesday. And now more Invest Talk. And even though it's a replay of a selected Invest Talk, you can still ask your question. Call the anytime number, 888-99-CHART.
We're going to go to Gordon in Escondido. How are you doing, Gordon?
Well, great. And I'm really happy that you took my call and that I wish I could have known about you guys a long time ago.
Oh, well.
I've just been listening the last about 4 months, so I'm using it as my education.
Well, great. Thank you.
Yeah, and I've just got two daughters through college, and now I've got to take care of myself. The Teamsters Union took our retirement some time ago, so I'm really just starting all over, and one of my questions is I only get to listen to you on bits and pieces in between my work. And I'm a sole proprietor I do construction. I'm just do a lot of handyman stuff. Okay. How much can I put in the Roth IRA first?
Are you over 50?
63.
So. Oh, gosh, you don't sound that old. That's great. The reason why I asked if you're over 50, because you get what's called a step up. It's $4,500 at age 50 and over. It's $4,000 under. But if you're self-employed, you can also open up like a SEP IRA. Now you're talking $12,000, $13,000.
Yeah, because I feel like I need to pack in as much as I can in the time that I have.
That's probably a smart thing, yes. And you have to start taking it at age 70 and a half. You know that, right?
Oh, at 70. Wow. That's
70 and a half, you have to start taking it out of the traditional IRA. At 70 and a half, you don't have to take any of it ever out of the Roth. But at a traditional IRA, you have to start taking it at 70 and a half.
Okay, I need to make as much as possible so I can get you to invest the rest.
That's right. I'd love to do that for you. Yeah, we have aggressive and moderately conservative portfolios, depending on which one you want.
Yeah, I like you guys. I've listened to you. I'm really, I think you guys are right on. Yeah.
Gordon, I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you for taking it, and I appreciate your program.
Thank you, Gordon. I appreciate that.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market, or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Let's go to Brent in San Diego. How are you doing, Brent?
Hey, just fine.
Thanks for calling.
You know, I had a question on the PEG ratio, the PEG, price to earnings to growth ratio.
Yes, sir.
What's it for? How do you use it? And what's a good one? What's a bad one?
Very good question. We use GEP, but many people use PEG. Same thing, but just the inverse, okay? GPE is growth to the price earnings ratio. PEG, PEG, is the PE ratio divided by the growth. So it's the exact same thing, but the inverse. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We like to use GPE. The good number. You asked me what a good number is? 2 on a GPE. On the PEG, it would be 0.5. And that would be 2 times the growth rate of the PE ratio. The PE ratio is 10. You want a stock to be growing at 20%. The PE ratio is 30. You want a stock that's growing 30%. What does it do? A company cannot have a PE unless it has E, earnings. So if you have a PEG, that means you are buying a company that at least has earnings. Now, it's a question of how fast it's growing those earnings. The better the PEG ratio, the lower the number on the PEG, PEG, 0.5, 0.4, 0.3, 0.2, the better it is. That means a higher growth it is to the PE ratio. Now the GPE, which is the same thing but the opposite, you want a 2, 2.5, 3, 3.5, up, the higher the number, the better on the GPE. So it ensures growth, Brent, ensures growth and earnings in a stock you're buying. That's what it does. So they're very, very important. We're going to go to Chris and Hayward. How are you doing, Chris?
I was just curious, you're flipping through the dials and listening to you. I was curious that there's been so much online infomercials and stuff like that. In fact, I even attended recently a Teach Me to Trade type, and I don't know anything about stock. They obviously were really flashy and had a lot of information. I was curious if I can get your opinion on that kind of stuff.
Unfortunately, people make it sound like it's super exciting. You can get in and out. You buy it at the bottom, sell at the top, and you could do this, and everybody could do this. Chris, to be honest, it's a lot harder than it seems.
Yeah.
It really is. The stock market moves up when earnings increase. That's as simple as that. If you have a company that makes money and it makes more and more money, eventually the stock price will move up. The problem, Chris, is it's not a perfect correlation. In other words, if my earnings go up today, the stock doesn't go up today. Because all of us guys, me included, are looking for next year because I want to be ahead of everybody else. We're all competing with each other. So, Chris, if I can mention just one thing to put in your head. Stock prices move up on earnings. Now, I know you're going to say, and it is true, well, you got stocks that go up all the time that don't have earnings. Yes, that's true. Those are called story stocks. They have a great story. I have the next cure for cancer. The stock will shoot up.
Right.
But in fact, if they don't come out with that cure for cancer, that stock will shoot right back down and go lower. So that's a story that they don't have it yet, that they're working on it. Earnings actually means I have made money, I am making money, I'm putting it in my pocket, and you as a stockholder, remember you own this company, you have made money. If you don't believe me, look at Microsoft over all its history. It's gone up 10,000% since it started. Thousands and thousands of percent. It's because it's always made money. It has not moved in 2 years and still makes a lot of money. That's why I mean it's not a perfect correlation.
Right, I hear you.
That can happen to you. But if you're going to be in this game any length of time, Chris, buy stocks that make money. You'll be a lot happier in the long run.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the call.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Time for InvestTalk 101, Junk Bonds. A desperate move in the low interest world. There's going to be a very interesting statistics I'm going to tell you about. One of the most popular assets today are junk bonds, by the way. These are companies rated below BBB by S&P, Standard & Poor's. BBB or lower is junk bonds. Historically, 42% of all corporate junk bonds ever issued defaulted. 40, let me get that number again. 42% of all corporate junk bonds ever issued defaulted. Means they didn't pay your money back. However, investors are clearly overlooking this, and they're accepting far lower yields than historical norms. You wait for the next recession. Junk bonds default all over the place. And many new junk bond issues are going to the market with very weak, non-existent covenants that typically protect bondholders from companies further leveraging their balance sheets. In other words, they used to issue junk bonds saying, okay, here's a bunch of junk bonds out there, but we promise never to issue more junk bonds because we don't want to get in too much financial a too deep of a financial hole. They used to issue those junk bonds with that covenant that they wouldn't do that. Now they don't. They're going to issue more if they want to. It's a very bad situation. Very bad. Okay, just so you know. And be careful of, you know, exchange-traded fund and bond funds holding on to junk. It's like the like we talked about earlier about the TAN ETF and solar energy, and then the underlying company goes has huge problems, and they you don't know what's inside there and how much problems they're going to have. So you got to be aware with what's under the hood, even in junk bonds funds. Be very, very careful. Now, just be careful. Do you have questions about junk bonds? Give me a call or send me a note. Go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. And by the way, we at KPP Financial never invest in junk bonds. In our income portfolio, we're 50% are bonds, all high-quality bonds. Big blue chip stocks. That's InvestTalk 101. If you have questions on this topic or any other, give me a call. 888-99-CHART is the number. 888-992-4278.
There's another way to get into the conversation on InvestTalk. Send us a question or comment via Twitter at KPP Financial.
Let's go to Eddie in Sacramento. Hi, Eddie. How you doing?
Good afternoon. If it's not going to teach me how to make money in the market, where in the heck do I find out the information and get the knowledge that investors acquire?
Very good question. You need to start reading. I know that doesn't sound exciting, but I'll give you a couple of books that you can look at that you can get out of the library or buy, and it's kind of for the beginners, very easy reads by people who have been in the industry, who've been very successful, and they're written in a fashion to try to give you a feel for how this works.
Okay.
Go to our website at investtalk.com. A couple of very good books is 1,000 Miles from Wall Street by Tony Gray. And if you can't write these down, you can go to our website. We record our shows at besttalk.com, and you can listen to it. Common Stocks and Uncommon Profits by Kenneth Fitcher. And Peter Lynch has a very good book, Beating the Wall Street. Or I would suggest you start with those books. They're very easy, and it kind of gives you a good idea of how this stuff works. And if I can give you one kind of rule of thumb, buy stocks that make money. There's too many story stocks, too many hot tips. Don't do any of that.
Uh-huh.
Buy stocks that have good earnings and are growing their earnings. That's a very simple thing to do. And you can find that out by most websites. So I started trying to read a little bit on some of these books, get a feel for how the market works and why this stock or that industry works and goes up. And you really can teach yourself if you have the interest.
What kind of money can a person expect to make in the market?
There is an element and a feeling of gambling in the stock market. There is that there. Think about it this way. When you're buying a stock, you're buying a piece of that company. If that company is making a lot of money, you're the owner of that company. The action of the stock price may go up or down. You don't know. But if the company is making money over a period of time, the price of stock may fluctuate differently than the earnings. So what you want to do is focus on the earnings, because eventually the stock price will go up to reflect that increased earnings. It may take time. People think they can get in, get rich quick, and then get out. That's not how it is in the stock market. That's how it was in the 1990s, but not anymore. The stock market is going to return you, on average, 10% a year, including dividends, because it has for 70 years. Okay?
Great. Thanks, Greg, very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We're coming up next. We're coming up on the last segment of the program. So let's try to get your question in. You can call up right now. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk about downsizing and retirement.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And we hope you'll take the time to join our InvestTalk insiders and gain access to some useful info sheets on annuities, wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance. There's an updated ETF list, too. You can have access to all these and more when you're an InvestTalk insider. It's free. Just sign up on investtalk.com. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to AZ in Van Nuys. Hi, AZ. How's it going?
All right. I'm trying to come up with questions for you. When the news comes, good or bad, isn't it a statistic for effect of news on a stock? Let's say when you get upgraded, it usually goes up 12%. When you get a contract, it goes up that much.
Yes, that's pretty typical. Also, when it gets downgraded, it'll go down. Some of these upgrades and downgrades really have nothing, that you know, they really don't mean a lot. They really don't, because these guys are wrong a lot, these quote-unquote experts. But it does affect the stock in the short term, yes.
Where do I find this statistic? Any site, any places you think they might have that as a statistic?
Where the statistic is how much something goes up or down? But AZ is referring to everybody, when they upgrade or downgrade a stock, it might go up that one day or down that one day, but it doesn't recover some of that.
Correct. Now, the question is, is it any statistic on library, universities, anywhere? They have this kind of effect of the news on a stock, of what percentage goes up and down on what news?
I've never seen anything or read anything, anybody tracking those statistics. But, AZ, it wouldn't surprise me if someone did.
That's what I'm trying to do.
I've never, you know, and I do a lot of reading and studying this stuff, and I've never seen anybody report on, you know, what the movement is the one day, 2 days, 5 days, 10 days after the announcement, you know. So I don't have any place that you can go that I know of, AZ.
You see, when I be completed after a year, then I write a book and I make some money.
There you go. That's what you do.
Tell me also, what's the earning per share we're talking about? What really means?
Okay, you know, a company sells products. After they pay all the expenses, and then what's left over is they divide that money by the number of shares outstanding, and then you get an earnings per share number. What they actually made. They do it earnings per share. I made 20 cents per share. They do it that way because it's the only way that makes sense. If a company says I made $10 billion, is that a lot of money or not a lot of money?
Based on the share, I got you. This is what they made in 1 year, you're talking about?
No, it's usually earnings per share. They will. When I talk to people, it's going to make like $3 next year earnings per share. That's for the whole year. But they always report it a quarter by quarter.
So when you say they divide it by how many share they have, they divide the income for quarter or they divide the income for a year?
Well, usually when the earnings come out every quarter.
Oh, quarter. Okay, they're talking about quarter. Okay, you got it. All right, good enough for today.
Thanks,
Tracy. You can go home if you want. I finished.
Oh, okay, great. Downsizing in retirement. We all probably have thought about it, figured out we have to do it. But it should be all part of everybody's retirement plan. If you're going to stop working for a living, you have to consider downsizing depending on how much money you have and how much income you have, cash flow, and all those other things. And of course, downsizing generally means the biggest thing that you own and that's your house. Should you sell it and go to something smaller? When you do that, you have to consider savings based on maintenance, utilities, property taxes, and if you have a mortgage, you want to get rid of the mortgage. But those are things you consider on the financial side of downsizing. One of the other things you might need to think about, and I have personal experience with this, can you maintain the property as you age? Can you climb stairs? My father-in-law lives in an apartment that has upstairs, and he never goes up there. He's 88 years old. He can't go up there anymore. He can, but it's a lot of work. He really doesn't want to. So, yeah, also, you have to start thinking about, since the home is a lot of people's assets are tied, the cash, there's a big load of cash tied in that house. So it's a way to sell that bigger house. It's a way to monetize that asset. And you know what? It's not. I can see more and more and more people, senior citizens, not wanting to own something. They can rent if they want to because they can move to someplace else. You know, I mean, we have this mentality, we have to own. Well, you don't necessarily. It depends on, you know, where you want to live and the cost of living where you want to live. You know, depends on what you have. You know, and this really is a personal situation, a personal decision. how much money you have, how much income coming in from Social Security, pensions, whatever, how much money you have and how much the assets you have that can produce how much cash, rental properties. Everything is very individual. So you have to look at your own case, your own personal situation. And we can do it for you. We can help you anyways. We have a software called Riskalyze that we take, and you can take the risk test and then send us the portfolio. And we can run a retirement map based on how much money you have and how much you're going to need and how much longer you're going to save, all those kinds of things. Something that might help you. Go to investtalk.com and take the Riskalyze thing, questionnaire. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial. Thank you for listening, and we hope you join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.